cricketwireless.com.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our guest today is Frank Pacetti, the City Administrator of the City of Kenosha. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Len.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. We're going to be talking to you about your career because you've announced your retirement, haven't you?
I have done so. I believe on July 3rd I announced.
And when did you start working for the City of Kenosha in this capacity?
Well, this capacity I started July 1, 2008. So 10 years as city administrator.
And you'll be on the job until?
December 31st.
So this is a very early exit interview.
Yes.
All right.
I wanted to make sure everybody had plenty of time.
Well, that's good. That shows how much you love the city. And just so our listeners know, we're recording this about a week ahead of broadcast time. Frank, I've worked with you long enough over the years to know what a city administrator does, more or less. Could you encapsulate, what's a city administrator? Why do we have one? What do you do?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. It's the easiest way to describe the position is in the private sector, you'd have a chief operating officer, and that operating officer is responsible for the day-to-day operations and the implementation of the vision of the chief executive officer and the board. And this is no different. This position makes sure that the vision of both the mayor and the common council gets enacted. It makes sure day-to-day activities come off, and it helps plan and provide information when they're crafting that vision or direction. And it's been very enjoyable.
How much of a responsibility does this position have to initiate ideas and bring new ideas and concepts to the attention of the executive and to the common council?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with who the mayor is, because every mayor has different styles. And I've been around City Hall now personally interacting with three different mayors, Mayor Moran, Mayor Antaramian, Mayor Bosman, and Mayor Antaramian again. And each one had their own unique style.
Well, you don't have to name names, but tell me about them.
They all had their own unique style. They all absolutely love Kenosha. They all wanted to do what was best for this community. And I enjoyed working with all three.
Do you find that it makes a difference, the personality of the mayor or their particular executive style, or does that really not enter into the equation other than in the personal interactions and what their expectations are of the position?
I think that makes a difference in who votes for them, who doesn't vote for them. It doesn't make any difference to me when I'm working with them on a day-to-day basis.
Frank, you've seen an awful lot in Kenosha during this period of time. There's been a lot of change. Tell me, when you first walked into your job, what day was that?
Well, as city administrator, July 1 of 2008.
What was it like then for you?
Well, I'll tell you, it was the city has gone through a tremendous amount of change.
2008 was not a good year for the country.
2008, 2009, 10, none of those were good years. Mayor Bosman appointed me to the position, and the first thing we had to do was figure out how we were going to deal with a $3 million loss in state aid. That was difficult, considering our budget was just cresting maybe $70 million. To lose $3 million in aid was significant. And we were able to wade ourselves through that. We cut no services. We eliminated empty positions, and we didn't send anybody home. And we're proud. Both the mayor and I were very proud of that.
I've been back in Kenosha. I'm a native, as you know. I've been back for 18 years, and I thought that was a remarkable accomplishment. How did you do that? How did you manage not to cut back services to the bone and remove plowing from streets and fire a bunch of people? Like other cities did that.
The interesting thing about the economy is when the economy and the populace is suffering, there's no lack of demand on city services or municipal services. Similar, when the economy is booming, there's not necessarily extra services being required from the community. In fact, one might say the better the economy, a slight less demand of services are demanded from the municipality because maybe crime rates go down and maybe the police have a little extra time when the economy is really doing well. But that being said, we took a very, what we thought was humane and practical approach. We knew coming into the office that there were a number of positions that were open, not filled. We also knew we had a number of retirements coming up. We looked at those retirements. We did that year give a we had a package for people that might want to take a little bit of an early retirement because we knew that if that specific position was vacated, we wouldn't fill it. And that combination and that thoughtfulness and analyzing what we had available to work with, we were able to accomplish.
All right, 2008, 2009, there was this period of retrenchment and really pinching every penny.
Yes.
And making sure that there were no new hires if you could avoid it.
That's correct.
Then how did we transition out of that? What did you see happening, and how does that play into the other things that were going on economically in our area?
Well, I would tell you that for the first 4 years, maybe once every quarter, somebody might come in and say, hey, I got an idea. I'd like to do a development, whether it be housing, whether it be warehouse, whether it be manufacturing. We're thinking about this, we're thinking about that. And usually the second call would never come. Then all of a sudden, we started getting these same type of calls, but maybe like once a month. And soon second calls came in after the first call, and maybe a follow-up from a meeting. And we recognized then that something was definitely going on. We knew the economy was improving. But I think it all spun almost on a dime when Amazon came knocking on the door.
So you consider that a turning point and a foundational turning point?
There's no question it was validation of the turning point. Let's put it that way.
And explain a little bit more so a layperson like myself can understand how that effect happens.
Well, obviously the economy overall, it's building blocks, right? You need people wanting to buy something, and you need people willing to make what they want to buy, right? And when those two things come together, beautiful things happen. And that's really, I think, what happened during that period of time was we got over the mortgage crisis. And once we got over that mortgage crisis, there was just fundamental stability, I think, in the economy to move forward. And as it began to move forward, e-commerce is certainly the future that we see right now with retail goods. Who knows what the future is 10, 15 years from now. But at this point in time, Amazon was looking to expand their distribution footprint in the Midwest. And they came to Kenosha. They found a piece of land they liked. I believe they liked the state of Wisconsin. And they found the cooperation from the city of Kenosha, and all that came together. They were wonderful to work with. They've been a great community partner, and they continue to be a great community partner.
Was Amazon's arrival so important because they were the first big development? Because there was a lot of other development going on.
Oh yeah,
on.
No, there
Abbott
was other development.
Abbott was talking about
they were
building.
Just big. They were a scale we had not yet seen.
And you talked about validation. You used that word validation.
Yes.
What did that validate?
Well, we had a bunch of people coming in to talk to us. There were a couple small projects already started, so that gives you an idea. Well, maybe things are turning. Well, when Amazon comes and wants to build, a 1.6 million. Square foot facility, that gives you validation that things have turned, and because Amazon doesn't look at that at the end of the cycle, they look at things like that at the beginning of a cycle.
Now, I imagine that you and the mayor and CABA and the county executive were really spurred into action at this point in terms of coordinating your efforts, and that caused a ramp up of activity on our side too, in our marketing. So I seem to recall that our marketing efforts really became much more intense around those years.
They did, and they can continue so now as well.
How important is the marketing of the community in that way? It costs money. People ask, why do we spend that kind of money?
You spend that kind of money because, nobody will look at you unless you introduce yourself. You can stand around and be the, you could make the best loaf of bread in the world, And if nobody ever gets to taste your bread, nobody will ever know. So you need to get out there. Sometimes you have to give away pieces of bread, right? My bread's the best. Taste this. And if you don't get a chance to do that, nobody will ever know. So that's what we've been doing. I can tell you that we went to the International Trade Show for Shopping Centers. It's in Vegas. It's there every year. It's the largest single convention in Vegas during the year, believe it or not. Of all the conventions in Vegas, this is the big one. Well, I got sent in 2009. It may have been big. There weren't many people there. I can tell you that the biggest development that people were shouting from the rooftops, these big developers that had these suites set up on the showroom floor, right? We're going to build a Walmart this year. That was big news. Okay?
Wow.
And there was no problem walking around. There was plenty of space, plenty of people to shake hands with. It was interesting, okay? Now, I had been told, I had never gone prior to that, but I had been told, you know, that back in the 90s, this place was literally a zoo of people, you know, shoulder to shoulder. Very difficult to get to meet the right people because their schedules are so booked. Well, this past year, the mayor went. And the mayor experienced, not quite maybe shoulder to shoulder, okay, but the showroom floor was full. And at that, he was able to talk to a number of, and he went with a coalition, and they spoke with a number of different people from around the country. Some who said, oh, yeah, I know Kenosha. I plan on coming out to see you. And other people saying, never knew about Kenosha. I need to come out and see you. So that's the type of stuff, that's the type of reaction that you're looking for when you go to these things.
While we're on the topic of Amazon, that brings to mind the I-94 corridor.
Yes.
And maybe we should stay with that corridor for a while. There's been a lot of changes in that corridor since I was a kid, that's for sure. It used to be all corn, and now there's practically none left. What's going on in that corridor? What do you see happening in the future? Is it going to be – are we on the right direction, do you think, of a better mix of – maybe retail and small businesses, large distribution centers, warehouses. There was a shopping complex that was supposed to go up across from where Woodman's is.
Right about 2008.
I don't know whatever happened to that parcel of land. Tell us a little bit more about that corridor. It's had tremendous changes. What's been the benefit of that change to start with? How has that improved our area, the change on the corridor?
Well, what you see today is a what I would call pent-up demand for a location that can serve municipalities and multiple locations. And there might not be any better spot to be than on the I-94 interstate system between Chicago and Milwaukee. We are the place to be. Tremendous commerce gets traded on that interstate system. And we're right in the middle. So, you know, whether or not you've got significant business north, significant business south, we're a great location to be able to serve both those markets. Amazon saw that need or saw that availability. The U-Line Corporation saw it, both in Pleasant Prairie as well as the city of Kenosha. And we see people now on a regular basis with various plans that want to build throughout that corridor. There's four more buildings probably on the cusp of being built within, probably will break ground within the next couple of weeks. And in addition to that, you cannot deny the influence of the Foxconn development just to the north. Foxconn will be a development that will not only be contained in the village of Mount Pleasant, but they'll have influence over development probably, you know, 30 to 60 miles back and north and south from that plant that are going to serve or be involved in something similar to what Foxconn is trying to do. I think, you know, the chairman, you know, coined this Wisconn Valley. Silicon Valley is not one city, right? Well, Wisconn Valley is not just one village. I think all of southeastern Wisconsin is going to benefit and have tremendous growth because of that development.
So you see a lot of diversification coming along this corridor.
Absolutely, I do.
Of all kinds. What about that shopping center that was going to be put up that we're talking about over north of west of Woodman's? Is that is that still owned for retail, or aren't you aware?
It's available right now. I mean, it's available for retail. It's available for manufacturing. It's available for I think we would look at just about anything there. Probably not housing.
Nothing definite.
We're not. Yeah, we're not looking at housing up against the interstate. We're looking at housing being drifted back, you know, a buffer between the industrial and the residential.
There's a lot of housing going up in Pleasant Prairie. I was talking to the administrator of Pleasant Prairie recently, and he and I were talking about that. A lot of talk is going on all over the state about affordable housing and something called workforce housing, which is sort of a euphemism for affordable housing that mm-hmm. seems more palatable in some quarters. What do you see as the housing issue, since we brought up housing now? Let's divert a little bit to housing. It's a big issue. We have a growing population. This was going to be the fastest growing part of the state after the last census, right? And we didn't know all the stuff that you just talked about then.
Correct.
So I don't know what that means for our future growth, but it seems to me that we've got some real interesting problems coming up, and affordable housing is one of them. I learned at a conference in Green Bay a couple of weeks ago that you have to make better than $16.50 a week, an hour in Wisconsin, in order to be able to have a family of four and afford a two-bedroom apartment.
That sounds about right. We're going to continue to see that demand grow. Obviously, when we just talked about the development of Foxconn, you know, 13,000 new people working just in the village of Mount Pleasant, and I firmly believe there'll be plenty of support and spinoff business that'll surround it. So there's another thousands of people going to work, you know, over 2,400 people work at Amazon, you know, almost 1,000 people work at the U-Line operation right in the city of Kenosha. That's on top of the other 1,000 people that work for U-Line in Pleasant Prairie, which is wonderful. And you know, it doesn't matter where they work. They spend their time in the community. They spend their time in the county. They spend their time, you know, in Racine County. They spend their time in Kenosha County. They spend their dollars in our communities. And that's the lifeblood of the community. And so as this continues to grow, there's going to be a demand for additional housing. All these new employees do not currently live here. Many do, but our unemployment rate is so low right now that there's not that many more available. So more people will be moving into our area, and that's going to cause a demand for all levels of housing, affordable housing, mid-priced housing, luxury housing. All of that is going to see a demand, I would say, over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Do you think there's a demand for affordable housing, low-income housing, that can be met by developers? Can developers afford to build that kind of housing in the current situation? There's a lot of talk
yes,
about that.
There's been a problem over the last, say, 10 years on let's call it entry-level housing, where it's not multifamily, single-family entry-level housing. You know, that number for a long, long time was, you know, entry-level housing about $125,000 a house. Difficult to find.
Yes.
$125,000 housing. And you cannot build it. A house that would sell at $125,000 needs more 2x4s and outlets and carpeting than $125,000 will support. Probably cost you about $150,000 to build $125,000. And, of course, that doesn't make any sense. Nobody's going to spend $150,000 and then get $125,000 back. So the economy needs to improve. So as the economy improves, as the unemployment rate goes down, as wages will see inflationary pressures, you're going to see the inflationary pressures. You can't have all those people vying for those jobs without pressure on the wage structure. Okay? I think I remember when Gordon Foods came to town, opening up their facility, which we you know, they continue to be a great corporate leader.
Great
of
corporate
our community.
Citizen.
Absolutely. I think they were paying about $11 for a forklift driver. And that's not that long ago. Okay, $11. And then, of course, Amazon came. And then Uline came. And then, you know, there's some other Meijer came in the Pleasant Prairie Park, correct? All of a sudden, they couldn't pay $11 an hour. Then they paid $16 an hour. Now I understand they're paying $18 an hour for a forklift driver. that's what happens when that demand hits. Right now, there's a tremendous demand for stone, believe it or not, stone, one inch, 1 1/4 inch square for support for roads, right, for the base for the roadways. 18 months ago, stone, every day of the week, $2 a ton, okay? Today, $18 a ton. That's significant. We just got a bid in to resurface an asphalt road. When you resurface an asphalt road, there's two lifts. There's the binder lift, that's the lift that's underneath that really supports the traffic. And then there's the finish lift, which is what you see and we put the lines on. That binder course was selling for $79 a ton 3 weeks ago. And that top coat was selling for $99 a ton. We opened a bid a couple weeks back where the binder coat is now $99 a ton and the finish coat is $199 a ton. So you can see these pressures of the cost of construction, the wages being paid. There was an article in the paper a few weeks back about we had to adjust our inspectors, our building inspectors, our electrical inspectors, our plumbing inspectors. We had to adjust their wage rates because we were being poached. We were being poached by other communities. We were being poached by electrical contractors. You know, and we thought we had just done a wage survey just a couple of years ago. We thought we were in, you know, we're not high, we're not low. We try to be somewhere in the middle of the pack. Well, you know, we had a city to the north of us take one of our inspectors pay him $20,000 a year more than we were paying. $20,000 to do the same thing for their community, and their community is half our size.
Can't fault them for taking the job.
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, anybody would do. But so we had to adjust. You know, we needed to make sure we need a master electrician working for the city of Kenosha. Well, unless you're paying the rate for a master electrician, you're not going to get a master electrician. So we made sure that, you know, we think we've adjusted now to hopefully. But when I presented that to the council, I said to the council, we're not done. Okay. If you think that this is it and we're going to fix things for the next 4 or 5, we're not. We'll be back. These pressures will continue. And so as those pressures continue, all of a sudden maybe that entry-level home becomes affordable. Now maybe it's not 125, it's 165, it's 175, but people are making the wages to support being able to move into 175.
I'm here this morning with Frank Pacetti, the city administrator of the city of Kenosha. He's going to be retiring at the end of the year, and after many years on the job, we're debriefing him and learning a lot about how the city and the county works and the economy. This has been very interesting so far, Frank. Thank you for being with us. Now, I'd like to turn to another topic and turn to the immediate present. There is a lot going on in Kenosha. You just talked about the bids you had to open that were astronomically higher than you expected. It's a wonder you have any hair left at all, because I'd be ripping mine out by the hands full if I had to cope with something like that.
Well, it's good that there's not much for me to rip out, so that saves me a lot of time.
Now, we've got the major projects going on at the interstate, KR, 158 is going, 31. Give us your overview of the projects going on right now, and we had a nice update from the mayor. That was quite a while ago. What's it like now in the middle of the summer, and what do you forecast for the rest of the year?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. When I look back over over a 30-year time period, which time I served as alderman of 15th District for 18 years, 10 years as city administrator, 20 years on the Redevelopment Authority. I look at those 18 years as alderman, and I remember every year pressure on how many roads are we going to fix this year? Which roads are we going to fix this year? How are we going to fix those roads this year? And I remember my very first year on council, 1990, the resurfacing budget for the city of Kenosha was $100,000. $100,000. Now, that's a lot of money, okay? But when it comes to roads, it's, you know, it's the proverbial, you know, ice drop in a glass of water, right? As we proceeded, by the time I believe Mayor Antaramian left office the first time, I want to say we were up to $1 million on resurfacing a year. Mayor Bosman took that to $2 million. A year. Mayor Antaramian doesn't believe $2 million is enough, and he's fighting for more money to get it above $2 million. During Mayor Antaramian's first 16 years, you know, we spent less than $20 million in rebuilding roads throughout the town. That was over a 16-year period. Okay, Mayor Bosman spent that same $20 million over 8.
Now, is that because of costs going up or because of deferred maintenance, or is it a variety of
whatever
factors?
You can think of, Len, contributes to that number. You know, winters are tough here, okay? It'd be nice if we lived in Georgia where, you know, there's no heave thaw, right? Heave thaw plays ruckus with our roads. They don't last as long. Cars and trucks, trucks specifically have gotten heavier over the years. Cars maybe a little lighter. Still the heave and thaw. And you know, we haven't had these normal winters. We've had these up and down winters, either severe or light. That, you know, those shock changes in temperature play havoc with our roads. And we've grown. We've grown.
A lot more traffic.
I don't remember how many lane miles we had back in 1990. I wish I did. I wish I had that stat with me. I don't. But we currently have over 325 road miles, not lane miles, roads. So just if you drove down the middle of the street, there's over 325 miles. That's a lot of miles of roads to take care of. And I think every mayor has done what they thought was best, but the demand outstrips our ability. So there's always going to be somebody complaining about a pothole. There will always be somebody complaining about, why that road and why not this road. Believe me, I think your alderman, your mayor, are doing the best they possibly can to address as many roads as possible to support the community.
So we're going to have a lot of these projects wrapped up by the end of the year, do you suppose?
I think you'll see people working on roads until the snow flies. And the DOT, I think, will probably be working while the snow is flying.
How long do you expect the KR improvements to take?
I've not been updated on how much on what the timeline is for those, but it's a big project. It's a complete rebuild. It's a complete expansion. So it's going to take a while.
Frank, you've seen a lot of intergovernmental issues in your time, and we could have a lot of fun talking about some of them. I wish I had been a fly on the wall in some of those meetings that weren't public, because it must have been very interesting. Where do you see the status of intergovernmental relations now? You've referred to your long involvement with the administration and the running of the city of Kenosha as an alder person and being a very responsible administrator. So you've seen it all over a long period of time. Do you think we're in a good place now with our intergovernmental relations? Because we know that as a region we're going to prosper, and if we fight amongst ourselves, we will lose opportunities.
I think the intergovernmental relationships, I think, are first off, I think they've always been good. I think they've gone from good to maybe better at times, maybe back down to good. I've never viewed them as strained. I've never viewed them as antagonistic. So I think things work out well. I think the biggest threat we have right now is that I'll take you back on my journey back to 1990. There were always Republicans and Democrats. As far as I can remember, there always have been in my lifetime.
In your lifetime. You don't go back to the Whigs?
No, I don't go back to the Whigs or the Tories. I don't have any knowledge of those people. Anyway, in my experience, they've always had ideals that are separate from one another. They both expressed difference in ideals, but they could always work together on issues of common ground. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be possible anymore. And that, I think, is the biggest threat, okay? Within locally, you know, we're mostly nonpartisan, okay? There's the city council's not Democrats versus Republicans. The county board's not Democrats versus Republicans. Unfortunately, the state legislature is Democrats versus Republicans. And obviously, Mayor Antaramian could speak to this much better than I can. with his experience in the legislature. But I think he'd tell you a very similar story, that when he was in the legislature, there were certainly arguments that were pro-Democrat or pro-Republican. But there were also a lot of issues that faced the state that needed to be resolved, and they would work together and shake hands across the aisle to do that. These days, very difficult, very difficult. Sometimes I don't think a Democrat or Republican could even say good morning to one another, because one would ask, what's so good about it? Or one would say it's a beautiful blue sky, and someone and the other side would say, no, it's green. I hope that improves, but I think that's the biggest threat right now.
You don't see any particular intergovernmental issues with our surrounding communities on the horizon that are going to have to be worked out?
No.
The big issues have now pretty much been settled.
I believe so.
What about the arrival of Foxconn? Is that going to create new issues that maybe we haven't even anticipated?
Oh, that's
yet?
Going to create new issues we've never seen nor
have
we thought about.
Let's talk about that. I've been saying, and this is just my hunch, that we seem to have figured out the roads and the water issues pretty well. I'm not sure we have the housing and cultural issues and the other issues that go along with rapid growth all figured out yet, and I think that's where the challenge is going to be.
I don't know. I'm not sure if there's been a community yet that has really figured it out, right? Think about some of the areas of the country that have experienced just rapid population growth. Las Vegas, North Dakota. They didn't figure it out. They tried. Good, smart people really trying to figure out, you know, how do we handle all of this. It happens so fast. And the same thing will happen here. It will happen at a rapid pace. I think the people in charge here are doing the best they possibly can to plan for it, to anticipate it. But when it actually happens, there will just be things that somebody will, I wish I would have thought of that.
Are there lessons we can draw from other cities, or do you think that their situations are so unique that it makes
we're doing
it
some of them. We're doing some of them right now. I mean, another place that grew rapidly in the, I believe it was in the 80s, was Denver, Colorado. Well, they didn't plan on the roads. They thought that, you know, the roads would suffice. We got more people, but the roads are fine. Obviously, we thought about that, right? We got 13,000 people coming to work. The roads are not fine. They need to be improved. We're improving them. So there are things that you learn from the past, but each occurrence is unique. And I don't think any two will be exactly the same.
Well, we're lucky. We have a lot of bright people here. We have universities, colleges. If we're all working together, we may be able to face this future and do it well.
That's absolutely correct.
Frank, as you think about the future, where do you see the opportunities for our region and our community coming in the future? And what do you think are going to be the challenges in the medium to longer term as you look ahead? And I know this is crystal ball gazing, no one could do it better than someone like yourself.
I don't know about that. There's probably a few people that would probably do a little better job with their experience and their intelligence. But as I see this region continuing to grow and prosper, I see it becoming more of a destination, and I really think we have all the components you have to really have a vibrant community. And I've always believed a vibrant community is live, work, and play. You got to be able to do all three, right? If that's all you can do is work, well, that's pretty boring. If that's all you can do is play, well, then that means you're traveling for your job, right? So you want to live, work, and play in an area, and I think this community has done a tremendous job to support that. I think there's we definitely have capacity for additional population. I think we've got the location for additional work, right? Work opportunities, and I think Lake Michigan provides a lot of areas to play. So we've really are poised, I think, to be in the right place at the right time as this area continues to grow.
Where do you think is the possibility of future educational needs? Where do you think we're going with that in terms of our, just in general, in order to support the kind of population and industries and businesses that we have here? you think that we're going to need more expansion in our educational sector? And I'm thinking post-secondary, of course.
Well, you can always use, as you grow, you always want to make sure that all segments grow together. You don't want to leave one in the wake. And I have to tell you, when I look at our higher education organizations, Gateway, Parkside, Carthage, each one of them, there's no moss growing under anybody's feet. The presidents, their boards, are always looking ahead, and they're always acting in order to face the future. As long as they continue to do that, I think we're going to be in good hands.
Frank, you're looking back now over a number of years, and you've had a lot of experiences as an alderman. What advice would you give to younger people, or maybe not so young people, even people my age, who have decided that they want to enter public life and run for office in municipal or village government? What advice would you offer? You've seen it from many vantage points.
Forget about ever being a Democrat or Republican. That's number one. Number two, talk with each other. And when I say talk with each other, I mean face-to-face. Work out an issue. Just because somebody disagrees with you once doesn't mean they're going to be against you every time. And when you try to get together and talk with one another, that's social. Sitting in a room all by yourself, texting letters into your phone, it's not social. That's anti-social. So you need to be social. You need to be out with your peers, with your constituents. You need to be shaking hands. You need to be having conversations. And if you keep talking, you'll probably find a solution, provided both sides are reasonable. That'd be my advice.
Now, we're going to be searching for a new city administrator very soon. Maybe they've already started. I don't know. If you were whispering in the ear of the mayor or the city council, what attributes do we need in a city administrator post-Frank?
Well, I think my years in the private sector helped a lot. Of course, you know, coming from the private sector into the public sector, there were, for me, a lot of "are you kidding me" moments. But that said, I think, you know, having had the opportunity to manage people in the private sector and to have that private sector experience really plays well in understanding how government works, especially on the financial side. So that'd be, I would say that's an attribute. Not a requirement. There are city administrators that have worked their entire life in government, and I'm not saying anything negative about that path. If you were asking my recommendation, I would say that you'd want somebody with some private sector experience.
These days, there's training programs and educational degree and certificate programs for things that we never even thought about educating people for in 1950 when I was a child. In your field, what kind of credentials does one carry if as a young person? Are there degrees like master's in public administration we look at? Is that meaningful for this kind of work? What kind of base credentials do you look for in a city administrator in 2019?
Well, you know, I've had the opportunity, you know, to hire a lot of different folks over my career so far, and I've never been a stickler for a degree or a few letters after your name. Certainly, they help. Certainly, I don't think it's time wasted, but it's always a combination of what's your education, what's your experience, what have you actually done. If you're young and you don't have a lot of experience, obviously the educational certifications have more weight. Once you move past achieving those certifications and you actually have a resume of what did you actually accomplish, I always think there's a little more weight based on what you've got accomplished. So is there anything specific? Certainly a Master Public of Administration, that's a good credential. Is it the be-all and end-all? I don't believe so.
Can you tell me what sort of credentials a person might have in terms of a basic education? You're looking for a college degree in this case?
I think it'd be difficult without at least a college degree, at least an undergrad degree.
Is it a typical career path to move from a smaller city to a larger city to a larger city? Do you look for people who make lateral transfers? Is it bringing in someone from Denver who's experienced this and wants to make a transfer into a small town? Are there any strategies in looking for people? Who are we likely to be able to get to come who's qualified? How does one envision that?
Well, I've always been a strong supporter in trying to cast the net as wide as possible. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't support somebody local. It simply means I think you have to look for the best. Look for the best and the brightest. That might be right here in Kenosha. It might be in Denver. But you've got to cast the net. So I don't think you limit yourself by saying, we're just going to do this, or we're going to have this tiny little box, and if you don't fit in this tiny little box, we're not going to talk to you. The net's got to be very wide.
I'm going to give you a magic wand to change the future.
That would be very dangerous.
And if you could...
Many of my friends would say, don't do it.
If you could change one thing or make one thing happen in the next 3 to 5 years, what would you like to see happen in the next 3 to 5 years in Kenosha? What would excite Frank Pacetti? That's a tough one. Top of mind.
It's tough because I never think about having a magic wand. So, magic wand, have one thing that I really would think would do something amazing for this community.
That's a tough one.
I fix every road. Every road. So nobody would ever have a pothole. That's number one. Because, you know, I've given this speech before when we were talking about choices between, when do you build a museum, right? When are funds available for a museum? Well, funds are available for a museum when you've taken care of all the basics, right? If you've plowed the snow in the wintertime, if you've taken care of the roads, if you go catch the bad guys and you save the burning houses, well, then there might be money available for a museum, okay? So this the same way here, that if we could fix every road so that nobody had a complaint about moving around, and the sidewalk, by the way, too. Don't let me forget the sidewalk. The sidewalk and the road, if those were all repaired, then I think you could really get creative, because then people would be the less you give people to have to complain about, you know, the more you fulfill the needs of your population, the more they look for other things to do to fill their time. So maybe that's what I would start with.
Very good. And what's next for Frank Pacetti? You're going to retire in December. I don't think you're going to sit in a rocking chair. You don't impress me as that guy. What's next for Mr. Pacetti?
Well, Frank wants to return to his home roots in the private sector. Not exactly sure in what capacity yet, but I've been talking to a few people and looking to talk to a few more and find the right mix. You know, I don't think I want to move two or three more times. So I'm looking for the right fit with the right needs. I know I've got a certain skill set in business improvement and maybe business mergers and acquisitions in that area. That's kind of what I'd like. I'd like to work on projects.
Okay, send all your phone calls to Frank. His resume is ready to be mailed out to you. My guest this morning on Community Matters has been City Administrator Frank J. Pacetti, preparing for retirement in a few months at the end of the year. Thank you, Frank, for being our guest today.
Len, thank you for having me.
We've learned a lot, and as always, I encourage our listeners to keep getting informed and get involved. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, UW-Parkside's Fine Arts Gallery presents an exhibit, Together, Racine, Kenosha, through October 16th. It features works from local Racine and Kenosha residents. For more information, visit uwp.edu. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Jefferson Elementary in Kenosha is looking for crafters and other vendors for a sale it's organizing for Friday evening, November 2nd from 4 until 8. To learn more, email ptojeffersonelementaryschool@gmail.com.
Support for WGTD comes from the law offices of Frank J. Paris, experienced representation, specializing in domestic violence and juvenile law, helping families overcome their most difficult odds. Better call Paris, 656-9906.
Support for WGTD comes from Sandy's Popper, Kenosha's family-owned ice cream parlor and gourmet popcorn shop, featuring nostalgic and gourmet sweets, gifts, and novelties. Sandy's Popper, poppin' and scoopin', downtown Kenosha, 5503 6th Avenue.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Seavery Scene will be collecting used athletic shoes as part of a Make a Difference Day on Saturday, October 20th. The program saves landfill space to help conserve resources. For more information, visit RPRCS on Facebook.